Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to the Tuesday, January 29th, 2013 edition of Family Bavette's Life After Combat Radio Show. This is Debbie Sprague. I'm a grassroots volunteer with Family Bavette, and I'll be your host for tonight's show. Any of the listeners out there that would like to call in with questions or to add any comments, we'd love to have you. Suzanne is here with me tonight, and she is manning the switchboard, so please give us a call. That number is 323-657-1470. If you didn't get that written down, don't worry. I will be repeating it again throughout the show. So tonight's show, I'm really excited about. Tonight's show is going to be about an interview that I did with Dr. John Gray, who is the author of one of the most famous relationship books ever published, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, The Classic Guide to Understanding the Opposite Sex. Boy, that's something we all need to know about. So we're going to try to gain some insights into your man's cave time, communication, and the basic differences between how men and women think and how PTSD behaviors fit into it all. So I'm so happy to have you here tonight, and hopefully we'll all walk away with some new insights into the differences between the sexes. So what's just being a man and what's PTSD? A lot of you know that I'm a coach, and I work on wellness and life solutions with spouses of veterans with PTSD. And quite a while back, I started a support group here in my own area. And one evening, I'm sitting at the table with a number of other spouses, and as we're all sharing our stories about what happened in our house that week and what our veteran did, one of the women who was new to the group, and she was just very quietly sitting there as all of the rest of us were piping with our weekly events. She said, "You know, it sounds like we all live with the same man." And we all agreed, "Yeah, we sure do." Another woman then said, "Well, Debbie, what's the difference between PTSD and just being a man? So what's the line that changes, because it does sound like we're all living with the same man?" Well, I thought that was a great question, and it really made me think about it. And all the other ladies at the table said that would be a great topic for us to talk more about. So I promised them that I would go do my homework on it and come back the following week, and we would delve into that topic a little bit more closely. So when I got home, I was thinking about a book that I had read many years before during the 9 years of being single between my first marriage and my marriage now to my veteran, Randy. So I looked and I found my book, which was my man manual. Every time something weird would happen with some guy I was dating, I would pull up the man manual to see, was it about me or what's going on here? So I found my book, John Gray's number one New York bestseller, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, The Classic Guide to Understanding the Opposite Sex, sitting there on my top shelf, and it made perfect sense to me that this would be the beginning point of trying to figure this big difference out between, so what's just being a man and what's PTSD? So in order to better understand exactly what our spouse's PTSD behavior is, we're going to look at the basic differences between men and women and just have some reminders about what constitutes normal male behavior. I noticed when I posted the announcement for the tonight show, somebody responded something about being a jerk. And I know a favorite thing that one of my friends said to me about my husband and his PTSD behavior was, "Oh, that's just his license for bad behavior." So we do have a variety of levels in male behavior. We have male behavior, we have jerk behavior, we have plain old bad behavior, and then we've got PTSD behavior. And probably most of our men may fall into several of those categories. So we're just going to learn about some of the basics here. Before I jump into the interview I had with Dr. Gray, I want to just start with some basics that are in the book, and just kind of to lay out some groundwork for the rest of our discussion tonight. So I'd like to start with just the basic differences in men and women. I'm not talking about the obvious ones that we all learned at a fairly young age. I'm not talking about the body parts. I'm talking about those invisible and much harder to figure out traits. I'd like to share a quote from the book from Dr. Gray that I thought was very appropriate and something I'd like you to think about. We mistakenly assume that if our partners love us, they will react and behave in certain ways, the ways we react and behave when we love someone. How many times have you had an expectation of having your husband or your boyfriend react in a certain way to you? You've already got your expectation and your visual of exactly how something's going to happen, and boy, does he disappoint you. Doesn't even come close. Well, that can create some problems. When we first fall in love, it all feels so magical, and we all hope and think that that love and that feeling is going to last forever. And we believe that the problems our parents had in their marriage, the problems that we see our friends and our relatives having in their marriage, that's not going to happen to us because our marriage is perfect, we have a fairy tale romance, and we are going to live happily ever after, no matter what. And that's hard enough to do when you are married to a normal man, but when we toss PTSD, TBI, and the strain and overwhelm of being a caregiver for a wounded warrior, that just adds so much more to the picture of what we need to understand and how much compassion we need to have and how much understanding and just how much more we need to know and understand and be able to deal effectively with our spouse. So as life starts going on in this new marriage, in this new love, the initial magic starts receding as the stresses of our daily life begin to take over. And men continue to expect that women are going to think exactly like they do, and we as women will continue to think that our men will react and think and feel and behave just like women do. It doesn't take us very long to figure out that that's not quite the case. And without a clear understanding of our differences and a really healthy respect for those differences, we can find ourselves becoming demanding, resentful, judgmental, and intolerant. And as we begin feeling all those feelings and doing those behaviors, our love can begin to decrease and problems can start creeping in. As the resentment continues to build up, the communication begins to break down. Mistrust increases and feelings of rejection and repressing of feelings begin to happen. All of these things, unfortunately, can result in affecting that magic of our love. And again, when we toss PTSD and caregiving into that mix, it makes everything much more difficult. So why does that happen? And how does that happen? Well, we're going to explore some of the reasons tonight. Living in the situation of not respecting and understanding the basic differences between a man and woman can make it very difficult for love to grow, but it can grow, And it really can happen that that love that begins so wonderful can continue and be better and better with each day. And again, the most important thing for that is for men and women to respect and accept their differences and give their love a chance to blossom. So let's take a look at some of the basic things that are important to men. Their basic needs. Men value power, competency, efficiency, and achievement. And since all of our men are veterans, those are all things that they found in their years in the service. They are always doing things to prove themselves and develop their power and their skills. Their sense of self is defined through their ability to achieve results. They experience fulfillment primarily through success and accomplishment. Men pride themselves in doing everything by themselves. This is a symbol of efficiency, power, and competence. Now, that's not to say that men don't work with other men and don't work as a team and aren't team players. But in each of those situations, they have their own role, their own job, and their own things to offer to make a success of the whole. Now, I'd like you to think about those things for a moment and think about your veteran. How many of these things has he lost? Does he still have things that make him powerful and feel competent? Does he still have things that make him feel successful today? How many things has your veteran lost that defines his role as a man? The wounds of war, both physical and mental, can strip so much away from our veterans. And understanding these characteristics can help us as women and as the women who love, honor, and want to care for our men, will help us to understand why men are so resistant to being corrected or being told what to do or to offer a man unsolicited advice, because to them, they're presuming that if he doesn't know what to do and we're trying to tell him, that we think he can't do it on his own. I'm sure that you have all, just like I have, you've done this before, and you've probably found that men are very, very touchy about this because the issue of their competency is so very important to them. When a woman innocently shares her feelings about being upset or explores out loud about the problems of her day, what does your man do? Most men will assume that we're looking for some great expert advice. So what do our men do? They put on their fix-it hat and they start giving us advice. That's his way of showing help and showing his love. He wants to help us feel better by solving our problems. He wants to be useful to us. And he feels he can be valued and worthy of our love when he shows us his abilities can be used to solve our problems. But if you're like me, that's usually not what I'm looking for. And women, as a whole, that's not what they're looking for. So once our man has offered a solution and we continue to be upset, it's very difficult for him to listen because his solution has just been rejected. And then he feels useless. He's got no idea that just by listening with empathy and interest, he can be supportive. He doesn't know that for women, talking about problems is not an invitation to offer a solution. One of the greatest tips that Dr. Gray offered in his interview was this. Dr. Gray suggested to me that every man needs to be trained to stand at attention and listen to their wives without talking, without moving, without making funny faces. Just stand like they're trained in the military to stand at attention and listen to their superiors. Every man should be taught to do the same for his wife. I love that. So let's take a look now at what's important to women, according to Dr. Gray, in his book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And let's see if you all agree with these things. Women value love, communication, beauty, and relationships. As women, we spend a lot of time supporting, helping, and nurturing one another. Our sense of self is defined by our feelings and the quality of our relationships. Our fulfillment is found through sharing and relating. I think if you take a glance at any of the chat rooms or the Facebook groups, this just is shown over and over again how women value and are so supportive of their peers and other women in similar situations. Men are on there too, but not to the extent that women are. So I think we can all pretty much agree how important these things are to us. Okay, now let's summarize the two most common mistakes that we make in a relationship. The first one is that a man tries to change a woman's feelings when she's upset by becoming Mr. Fix-It and offering solutions to her problem that basically invalidate our feelings. And number two is a woman tries to change a man's behavior when he makes mistakes by becoming the home improvement committee and offering unsolicited advice or criticism. Now, when we understand that these two differences exist, it makes it easier to respect our partner's sensitivities and to be more supportive of them. So do any of these things sound familiar to you? Possibly you've heard your husband or your man say this to you. Honey, you shouldn't worry so much. It's really no big deal. Okay, I'm sorry. Just forget about it. But my favorite, my very favorite, that tweaks me no end is, but you shouldn't feel that way. Or, you don't really feel that way. Don't you just love it when your man tries to tell you how you feel? Another great one is, why do you let people treat you that way? Just forget them. Now, that might be easier said than done, but usually we're talking about somebody in a situation that we really can't just walk away from. It's usually our mother or our sister or a friend or our boss or someone that is an integral part of our life that it really is not possible to just walk away. I remember my first husband said something that it still rings in my ears today. I owned a business and I was venting about how much work I had to do and just not knowing how I was going to get all this work done by the deadline that I had for it. So my husband looks at me and he says, well, just don't go to work. Just lock your office door and don't go. I'm thinking, well, there's nobody else there to do the work, so how is that going to help? And that wasn't really what I was looking for. I knew that I would get my work done, and I just needed to vent, just like we all need to vent and talk about our problems. We normally aren't looking for a solution unless we say, I need your help. So how many similar things that we say to our man that might make them feel controlled? Now, I'll be honest here when I mention some of these things and think about if these are things that you might say to your veteran. How can you even think about buying that? You already have one. I'm guilty of that. I think my husband owns 15 putters, and I say that to him every time he buys a new putter. There's a parking spot right over there. Turn the car around and go back to that one. Don't put that there. It's going to get wet. You're driving too fast. Slow down. You're going to get a ticket. Where have you been? I didn't know where you were. You didn't call me. You're eating too many sweets. It's not good for your diabetes. When are you going to call the bank back? They've already called you 3 times now. Some of these things are a little tough when you're actually married to a man that has PTSD and they have a memory problem, and we walk a fine line. I know with my husband I walk a very fine line on having to say things like this because he is a diabetic and he does forget things, and so trying to remind them gently about things that they've forgotten in a loving way where they won't think you're controlling them, but to make sure that these important things get done can be very, very difficult and a very, very tactful thing that we need to figure out how to do as the spouses. So how many of you have heard some of those familiar words? Things you've said to your spouse or things that they've said to you? I'm pretty sure that most of us have. And it's no wonder that we often have problems communicating. So now that we have a little bit more understanding of men's needs and women's needs, let's talk about coping with stress. To feel better as women, we like to get together and openly talk about our problems. A woman feels good about herself when she has loving friends who she can share her feelings and problems with. On the contrary, when a man gets upset, he seldom talks about what is bothering him. He wouldn't want to bother another man with his problems unless he feels that his friend's assistance is really necessary to help him solve the problem. So what does he do instead? He becomes very quiet. He goes to his cave to think about his problem and trying to find a solution. Then, once he's found a solution, he feels better and he comes out of his cave. If he can't find a solution, then he does something to forget about his problem. But while our man is stuck in his cave, he's also powerless to give us the quality attention that we deserve. And we as women don't always understand the reason for the cave or how to handle his cave time appropriately. And when this happens, a lot of problems can arise. So this is one of the questions that I asked Dr. Gray in my interview. And I was just so honored to get to talk to him in person because it's, as I said, it's a book I've had for many years and I can't even tell you how many times I've read it and all the pages in my book that have been turned over and ink marks written to point out some of the things that I wanted to go back to again to try to figure out. Well, Dr. Gray, well, first of all, some of you may know that I'm just finishing up writing a book called A Stranger in My Bed and 8 Steps to Getting Your Life Back from the Contagious Effects of PTSD. So one of the topics I wanted to include in my book was this topic about the difference between PTSD and just being a man. So I contacted Dr. Gray about doing an interview with him, and it had been suggested to me by the friend who put me in contact with him that I just ask for 10 minutes of his time. So I asked for 10 minutes of his time, and he agreed to that. Well, I was so honored to talk to him, and it was so informative and so exciting. But 10 minutes came and went, and we went well over 60 minutes, and Dr. Gray provided some really great, great information that I really hadn't seen anywhere else, with kind of a different take on several things that I hope you'll find interesting as well. And I'm going to share some of those things with you, but especially we're going to talk about the cave time and about, well, here's my first question to Dr. Gray was, I asked him if he could explain just being a man and what behavior goes beyond that with different PTSD symptoms. And later in the interview, he got quite a bit more specific about this. But the short answer to that was, first of all, he thought it was a great question. And he also thought it was a very good thing to make the distinction between PTSD and typical male behavior. Because he pointed out that the PTSD response is often going to be an exaggerated male response. And because those responses can be so exaggerated that even when they are just a normal male response, when we as spouses look at it, we think, oh my gosh, this behavior is so huge. It's just so unsolvable to be able to deal with this situation. So we have actually got some really good insight into that whole topic. I want to jump to the question that I asked him, which was Dr. Gray was asked, one of the things that he talks about in the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, is the male retreating into the cave. And I know that from my own experience as a veteran's wife, as well as a lot of the other spouses that I work with and that are friends, this is a very common behavior for veterans with PTSD. So I asked Dr. Gray if he could give us some insight into the behavior and at what standpoint does the cave time go beyond normal behavior and become PTSD behavior, and what we can do about that, and how long we should let that go on, and what we should do while they are in their cave. So I'd like to share with you the response that Dr. Gray gave me to that question. Dr. Gray started off by telling me that men process stress differently from women. So when a man withdraws into his cave, this is the way that men primarily cope with stress. And as women, we can very easily misinterpret that. We may be thinking, oh, he doesn't love me, he doesn't care about me, I must have done something wrong. How many of you think that when your man walks away and goes and shuts the door? For a woman to suddenly build a wall around her heart and to completely shut down takes many, many years of feeling ignored and neglected. Gradual resentment builds up and builds up and builds up. As women, we tend to sweep that all under the rug until suddenly we can't tolerate it any longer. And then it's okay, I'm finished, I'm done. I can relate to that so much. In my first marriage, which I was married for 13 years, and for years I tried and tried and tried to get my husband to go to counseling and just tried as hard as I could to make the marriage work. Until eventually, this happened to me. It just was too much, and one day I looked at my husband and said, I don't want to be married to you anymore. And the second those words came out of my mouth, I had an enormous feeling of relief, but I was done. You know, there was no talking, there was no trying to fix fences. I had done and tried, and with no response. So when those words came out, I was done. So I can really relate to how that can happen. And I can urge you, and I know that with my current marriage that we're going on 13 years, to not let things get that to that point, to really do everything you can to learn and to work with your spouse and to know what's going on and to get the help that you need to, you know, try to not let all of those things build up to the point where you are done. So For a woman, it takes a long time to get that place of, I don't care. But with a man, it's actually his first defensive reaction. It's as if suddenly there's a huge wall up around his heart. And just as suddenly as that wall goes up, it's gone. And this is so contrary to how women do the wall. So when the man's wall goes up, a woman can easily misinterpret it to have the same meaning as it would as if it were our wall. Because for a woman, it's such a gradual process of slowly letting that wall down, rebuilding trust, and finding forgiveness for all those things that we felt resentful for. But for a man, simply dealing with stress, which is not about us at all, can activate a whole wall around his heart. And that phenomenon would be called shutting down. It's literally an automatic reaction. It's just like when you go to the doctor and he hits you on the knee to check your reflex. For a man, this is just an automatic reflex. Dr. Gray went on to say that he was going to explain the biology of all of this to us, the biology of the differences in men and women and their reaction. So when a man is in danger, he survives by having a much faster reaction time. Reactions come from the back part of the brain. And with training, you can help develop the right reactions. But regardless, when he's in danger, the blood flow goes to the back part of the brain so he can have a faster reaction time. Now, that's not the same part of the brain that's able to hear another point of view, that's able to be patient, that's able to be empathetic, that's able to be understanding. So when a man becomes stressed or in danger, or he thinks he's in danger, all of the relation skills that bring men and women together are basically gone. And he is in fight or flight mode. Now, when that man is with someone that he loves, he doesn't want to fight them, and he doesn't want to leave them. So that puts a man in a great state of confusion. And you have to realize that historically men have been in danger, and the way that they process danger is by being quiet and not talking. So when a man is feeling danger and his cortisol levels are rising, he needs to quiet his mind. The very worst thing he can do is to talk to the person with whom he's feeling defensive or whom he's threatened by. That would be us. Men have adapted this way for thousands and thousands of years. It's time to be quiet and to focus on what he can do, what the solution is. That's why when women tend to be upset, men will want to interrupt and solve the problem. What's the solution? We can, in a sense, kill the problem or get rid of the problem. Then we can be at peace and ease and go on with life. Men react to a woman's strong feelings by being threatened. And this is a new insight for both women and men to have. When a woman is experiencing moderate stress, there's 8 times more blood flow to the emotional part of her brain than there would be to a man experiencing the same level of stress. This creates an emotional tone equal to the tone of emotion that a man would have if he were under extreme stress. So, in other words, if there were lions and tigers and bears and bombs dropping, it's a high level of stress. If it's to the extent that a man feels powerless to solve the problems, he will experience a greater emotional reaction. In times of great danger, he will have a very, very strong reaction. If it's moderate danger, he has less of a reaction. If it's just moderate stress, he has absolutely no reaction. So the difference between men and women is that under moderate stress, again, women are having 8 times the emotional reaction that a man has. So then if she's actually upset with him, let's double that. And the way he misinterprets that is that she is really, really upset. And that triggers a feeling of threat inside of him. He feels that she's looking at him like a lion, tiger, or bear, when in her mind she's actually just saying, you know what, you forgot to empty the trash. Or, I forgot to run this errand. I need help. I'm stressed out about this thing. It's just moderate life problems. But unfortunately, his brain misinterprets it. He doesn't recognize that women have different emotional reactions to things, and he becomes defensive. As soon as a man becomes defensive, you need to stop communication. This is the biggest problem between men and women. When a woman is feeling threatened, there's a strong emotional reaction. Something that would help calm her down is to talk about what she's feeling, to talk about her experience, to talk about what's happening inside of her. Because of her experience, she knows that she needs to talk things through. She thinks that if he's experiencing stress, she should go to him and say, honey, what's the matter? What are you feeling? Why are you saying that? Or to tell him, don't talk to me that way. These questions and comments can increase the emotional intensity of his reaction. The ideal thing to do at those times, when his upset is increasing, is to just stop the conversation. At that point in time, arguing is the very worst thing that you can do. That's the time when you have to just go slow and say time out. It's so important that we understand that the way he processes stress is that he calms down by forgetting about whatever the problem is. And I know for me, and I'm sure for many women that are listening, that's infuriating when they seem to forget about something that is so vitally important to us. But whatever the threat is, he just needs to withdraw. He needs to relax by doing something that's not endangering him, that's not threatening him in any way. So that's what's referred to as cave time. So he pulls into his cave. And he does something or anything that will distract his attention from the problems that he's facing in his life. That distraction could be TV, it could be watching a sporting event, it could be reading a book, listening to music, it could even be some easy exercise. Those are all healthy distractions. My next question to Dr. Gray was I asked if there's some examples that he could provide us of exaggerated cave behavior, behavior that might be exhibited by veterans with PTSD. Dr. Gray shared with me that some of those exaggerated behaviors could be drinking alcohol, taking drugs, driving his car or motorcycle really fast. These are ways that men actually withdraw from the stresses of their lives by creating another danger where they feel in control. This feeling created by stimulating the brain chemical dopamine. Danger is a super dopamine stimulator. It motivates a person to take action fast and improves one's reaction time. Dopamine 10 needs to function in the brain to give the alertness and the energy for faster reaction time and pleasure. But when a person is in combat or in danger for a long time, and he's getting high levels of dopamine stimulation all the time, that has the effect of what's called down-regulating dopamine receptor sites. This is basically desensitizing the dopamine receptor sites so that normal stimulation doesn't produce the effects that a person seeks any longer. He then has to look for super stimulation to get the effect, This so-called drug addict now becomes bored and flat. Life is boring, life is not motivating, and life has no purpose. There is no motivation because the receptor sites have been, in a sense, down-regulated by excess stimulation. So now the veteran might look for things to get the dopamine stimulated. Playing video games, for example, burying himself for hours in a video game, shooting, scoring points, and winning. Those are all examples of ways that are dopamine stimulators. Another dynamic that goes along with PTSD is that when a man or a woman has been in danger consistently for a period of time, it literally has the effect on our brain as if we were taking an ADD drug, cocaine, or meth. They're all super dopamine stimulators. Dr. Gray says that soldiers are medicating themselves right now in ways that aren't really addressing finding balance. Some of them are just treating their dopamine imbalance with things like high caffeinated drinks such as Red Bull, because high caffeine also stimulates high levels of dopamine. Most soldiers have a gene that converts alcohol into dopamine, and they're looking for these high dopamine stimulators. So if they're not going with alcohol, they tend to go with high sugar, which also stimulates dopamine. Another big one that Dr. Gray shared with me was the use of internet pornography. He really stressed that men need to be taught that doing internet pornography is just like taking cocaine. There's no difference. The same part of the brain lights up your down-regulating receptor sites. You're just finding another combat situation. Like combat, pornography stimulates high levels of dopamine. So does anything you do sexually that you wouldn't want to tell your minister or priest about. If you wouldn't want your mother to find out, or you wouldn't want your children to know, you wouldn't want to be found out by anyone, that becomes illicit sex. So anything out of the ordinary that now men or women want to do because it's not acceptable to society. If society were to find out, then they'd be in trouble. They'd be looked down on and they'd be rejected. Those activities have a sense of danger, and that sense of danger stimulates dopamine. So when you find the men coming home and wanting to do things like cheating on their wives, or wanting to do things that our current society would consider perverted. Many soldiers want to do those things because they're immoral according to what our society's morals are. If everybody accepted them, they wouldn't be such dopamine stimulators. Now, Dr. Gray's not saying that we should all accept them. What he's saying is that anything that society doesn't accept, or anything that's a big secret, like having affairs or sitting on the computer at night while your wife's sleeping, or watching all kinds of videos and pictures, anything that you don't want to get caught at, that stimulates high levels of dopamine. So anything that creates danger stimulates dopamine. Dr. Gray also talked about how many soldiers are coming home and committing suicide. And I know that's a statistic that we're all very concerned about. Dr. Gray believes that they're doing this because they're depressed, they're not motivated, and their life has little purpose or meaning. It's also the brain chemical dopamine. One of the dopamine needs to function in the brain is to give alertness and the energy for faster reaction and pleasure. But when a person is in combat or in danger for a long time, he's getting such high levels of dopamine stimulation all the time that has the effect of what's called down-regulating dopamine receptors. So some of the common symptoms when you don't have enough dopamine is wanting to kill yourself. all your receptors have just flattened out. Their dopamine receptors have basically been ruined by being in combat and being in danger, and they just simply give up. I'd like to take just a second here before we move on to give that call-in number again. So if anybody has any questions or comments that they would like to throw in here, our guest call-in number is 323-657-1470. So my next question to Dr. Gray was, I asked if there's anything that can help these veterans return back to normal. Dr. Gray told me yes. What they have to do is they have to upregulate those dopamine receptor sites so that the smile on their wife's face is enough to make them happy, so that just being together in a normal conversation is very stimulating and gives them time and energy and motivation, so that it doesn't have to become an extreme emergency to be motivated, nor does it have to be a drug or super stimulant to motivate them, to give them pleasure in their brain. Our veterans' brains have changed. They come back different, and this actually can be measured. The back part of the brain, which has to do with the automatic reaction, has grown. The front part of the brain, which has to do with communication, empathy, understanding, creativity, shrinks. But it will grow back. What you use will grow, according to Dr. Gray. The key thing to finding balance again in these dopamine receptor sites, which have flattened out, and that's what the addictions have done to you. Combat and addiction do the same thing to you. You begin depending on excess stimulation to feel pleasure. The normal stimulation just doesn't give you pleasure and therefore doesn't motivate you. So it's just a vicious cycle, and it only gets worse and worse. You can come back from combat. You can drink lots of caffeine, or you can go lift weights. That's another addiction. You'll see prisoners doing this as well. They don't have drugs, so they go out and lift weights. They're producing excess challenge, which also stimulates dopamine. So they're not just going to lift some heavy weights. They're going to really, really push it. They're going to growl and grunt and make all kinds of noises because it's so hard to do. But what happens is it's a drug-like experience. So all of these intense experiences cause one to lose the ability to have a normal, healthy relationship. The brain has to be changed back. And it will change back just as quickly as it changed by going into combat. It takes time to get back to normal. This is when you go off any drug addiction. But the process of coming back from combat is the same. You need to replenish the brain with amino acids, with minerals, with omega-3s, so it can begin to heal. And just like any drug addiction, you're going to go through a period of time. And it's going to take time to get off the drug. In this case, you're going to find yourself in a situation where you're not seeking out excess stimulation to feel better. To get through this process, you actually have to put yourself in a place where you're feeling bored. So feeling bored can produce a great deal of anxiety. You have to back off from excess stimulation and at the same time fortify your body with extra nutrients. Often soldiers have no awareness of this, and that's why they feel boredom, flat, and a lack of purpose. And this also creates a feeling of needing to get back into combat for some order and to find a sense of purpose, which produces dopamine. Dr. Gray also emphasized how important it is for veterans to have jobs when they come home. They have such a need to feel successful, and they need to go through a period of downtime or boredom. And during this period, they have to use all the willpower that they can maximize for this excess stimulation, addictive stimulation, in order for their receptor sites to start upregulating again so they can come back into a normal life. So these are some of the dynamics that Dr. Gray shared with me that I was not aware of them, and I know that many of the listeners and many of our veterans aren't aware of them either. He went on to tell me that the thoughts of suicide always occur when there is a dopamine deficiency in the brain, and that's why we have lots of suicides. But many of the soldiers may not be considered suicides because they may die in motorcycle accidents. For many, that's an easy way to die with dignity, and other people don't perceive it as suicide. They perceive it as an accident. So if we become aware of what's bad for our veterans and know what some of our options are, then it's a lot easier to hopefully start having choices that are better for us. And as we talked about earlier in the talk, it's so important for our veterans, again, to have a job, something that gives them meets all the values that they have and help them get back to a normal, active life. So in terms of spouses and what we can do, I just want to go through a couple suggestions and tools for when our veterans decide to have their cave time. I know it's really easy to want to chase our veteran into their cave when we don't know why they're going in their cave. So it's very important to understand their reason to be alone, their reason to need that time to figure out a solution. And when they come back out of their cave, we need to welcome them back and not punish them for taking that time to sort out their problems. Now I'm talking about when they're normal cave time, not when they're doing some of the excessive activities that we were just talking about. But it's going to be very difficult for your veteran to have the time to process his problems and to be able to reconcile what's going on if every time he takes a little bit of time away in the cave, when he comes out, we're angry at them. We withhold sex. We withhold our affection. We are very angry that they've done that. So the best thing that you as a spouse and a woman can do is to not sit outside the door of the cave and wait for him to come back. Go on with your life. Find something enjoyable for you to do while he's dealing with his problems, which may or may not have a thing to do with you. Go on with your life. Take some time for yourself. Don't bother him. And don't keep asking, what's wrong? What did I do wrong? Is this my fault? So many times we do want to take on the responsibility for that. So I would like to have Suzanne come on, because Suzanne talked to a few men and has a little bit of some male perspective that she would like to share with us. So Suzanne, why don't you hop on the call and let's talk a little bit about your thoughts on this topic.
I'm kind of actually at a loss because, I'm person in the relationship with the PTSD and also a caregiver, and like listening to this whole broadcast going, oh my goodness, I could be a man. I think it really boils down to the whole aspect of how PTSD really deals with kind of sucking your emotion completely out of you, and goes back to how you were raised and trained. So I don't want to sound weird about that. Just it's like,
no, I think that's an excellent point, because
even though I'm a woman, because I'm that person who says, you know what, this is how it's going to be, this is how it is, and at the end of the day, if it's not, I'm probably going to lose my mind, so I'm going to go off to the little cave. I call it a little bear cave, by the way, and just go off to my little spot and go, okay, let me think about this. I am actually a fixer of problems. Sometimes I'm not very empathetic to anybody else's ideals or just, but yet I do see a lot of my male friends, especially who to this point even now are not dealing with that this might be a problem. I have known many soldiers who have become adrenaline junkies to replace, they don't drink, they don't smoke, they replace the dopamine rush with adrenaline and do off-the-wall, crazy, life-threatening activities. Even though they know they have a family at home and a wife that needs them to be there. I think I'm kind of off track right now because it blows my mind, this whole, it's amazing to actually view. And men are so, I think men want to be a certain way because that is what we're told a man's role in life is, especially one that's in the military who's been on the front lines of any kind of battle. This is how you're supposed to be. This is what you're trained to do. And I think that the hardest part when they come home is because they need that closeness. They need that bond with their family. But now they're at the loss because of all the time they were trying to connect and build that family up. They no longer have that connection. But they're trying to reach out. They're saying, look, I know something's wrong. I just can't tell you. And it's not because they can't tell you they don't want to. It's they can't tell you that's not a manly thing to do.
That's a really good point, is that as much as they want to, it's so difficult, and that's kind of the basic structure, according to Dr. Gray, of men, of not sharing those things, and as women, we tend to share more. Just a quick question, Suzanne. Before your time in the service, do you feel like you were more, shared your feelings and enjoyed that nurturing love type of things that Dr. Gray talks about that's typical of a woman? Do you think that you became more of a fixer and took on more of that once you got in the military, or just those are traits that you've always had? Because we all, you know, things aren't really cut and dry. Our life experience, who we are, our families, everything kind of fits into how we step into our
world. As a woman, and also as men, you have the thought that these are, you know, the first thing you're taught as a woman is you're the caregiver. You take care of everything. You know, dinner, this, that, and the man provides. And as you step into the military, the roles are very kind of merged because now you're told that these mostly children are your responsibility. So not only do you not have a family at home, you have a family at work that you must take care of. And so the lines are blurred in the sense of you still feel the need to caregive, but I think when you become that person in the uniform, some of it's lost at work. And so when you get home, you're just kind of wore out and tired, and you just don't have it in you at that point to say, okay, I can do this again.
That's such a great thing, because our guest for next week's show was a female Black Hawk helicopter pilot, and she has a great project that she has started to help women, when they leave the military, to get their femininity back, to remember how to be a woman and how to be a mother and how to be nurturing. So that is such a great intro to our next week's show, because Elizabeth is going to talk about a lot of those things. And that was such a great addition to that. Thank you for...
Well, it really is what it is. So for a woman and trying to play both roles.
And it sounds like it's a part of yourself that you, it's very easy to lose and not so easy to get back once you are civilian world.
It's very much like the man. It becomes your life. It's how you view yourself as a person and your worth, not just what you do at home, but what you do at work. And when you lose that, you lose a big chunk of you.
And that's such a good point for both our women who serve in the military and also the men, when such a big part of your life is gone, and there's often not the things to immediately replace it with, and there's just that huge void of who you are and your things that make you feel you have a purpose and a meaning in life. And I'm so glad that you've reached out to Family of a Vet and are bringing back meaning to your life by helping us out so much. And I just adore having you on the call with me.
Well, thank you, because honestly, it has been a big part of my life. And people who, the spouses, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but men and women that actually want to understand what we are going through and why we feel at this great loss and why, you know, all of a sudden, we are from Venus and Mars. We're so different. you know, apparently everybody's going to have to go on a NASA program.
Yeah.
So let's all get on the spacecraft, go back to the mothership, and figure out all this, and go from there. But
yeah, start over again. Well, I think our recording has stopped now, but let me just quick do the ending here just in case we're still on the recording. So I'd like to thank you, Suzanne, for helping tonight. And on behalf of Family of a Vet's Life After Combat Radio, I'd like to say thank you to our listeners. And again to Suzanne for manning the controls tonight and hopping in and sharing some great information with us. And this is Debbie Sprague signing off for Family of a Vet's Life After Combat Radio. Okay, now we're officially done. I'm not sure. Well, next week, I'm anxious to...
Wait, let me cut us both off.